The Window World of Northeast Florida, fifth quarter on 1010XL. Presented by Jacksonville Area Napa Auto Care Centers.
And Dr. George Barry and Barry Orthopedics.
Here are your hosts, Ryan the Hacker Green and Leon Searcy.
Garoppolo drops the throw. Fires back in the end zone. That ball's going to be caught for the touchdown. George Kittle, a little slant in front of Andrew Wingard. He made the catch. A one-yard touchdown pass from Garoppolo to George Kittle.
Frank Frangie on the call, Jaguars Radio, and with that, a very good Sunday evening to you, Jacksonville. It is the Window World of Northeast Florida, fifth quarter. We are presented by Jacksonville's area Napa Auto Care Centers and by Dr. George Barry and Barry Orthopedics with Leon Searcy, the hacker, Ryan Green with you, the Jaguars. I guess you call that football today. It didn't look like it at times. Certainly not the NFL variety. San Francisco wins the game 30-10. It really wasn't even that close. San Francisco didn't really try very hard, if you ask me, through most of the fourth quarter. And the Jaguars fall to 2-8 on the year. We got a lot to get into. Now, I will tell you right off the bat, this is a little different fifth quarter than what you are probably used to. If you're a college football fan, you understand that Dan Mullen has also been fired today at the University of Florida. So not only are we going to talk Jaguars, we are going to talk about Dan Mullen and his departure in Gainesville. We're going to be joined by Frank Frangie, Dan Hicken, Matt Hayes, among others, throughout this two-hour window. But Leon, let's begin on the Jacksonville Jaguars. And boy, I got to tell you, from a media perspective, I was sickened at what I saw. You were a former player. You went to a Pro Bowl in that Jaguar uniform. Reminded me an awful lot of times we saw last year. What did you think?
Well, listen, I watched the game, and, you know, Hack, you know, I frequent the boxing gym, all right? I go boxing every now and then, and I'm usually on the heavy bag. The heavy bag, and in the routine of doing the heavy bag, I'm throwing uppercuts, I'm throwing body blows, I'm throwing straight jabs, I'm throwing crossing jabs, all that kind of, that's what happened to Jacksonville today. They were a puncher bag to the 49ers. The 49ers lined up in two tight end sets, fullbacks, and they ran outside zone, inside zone, counter, wham. They did whatever they want to. And listen, when your offense and 70% of your efficiency is running the football and the defense knows it's coming and they can't do anything about it, that's the most demoralizing thing that any defensive guy would tell you. Now, our offense didn't do any help. Now, after the first drive, the 20-play drive, you know, the defense is on the sideline and the offense gets the ball, and then they turn the ball right over and the defense right back on the field. So the 49ers knew exactly what they were going to do. They were going to pound the ball at the Jaguars. They were going to play action. They were going to run some misdirections, and the Jaguars had absolutely no answer for any of it.
This was a 49er team coming in on a short week. They had played on Monday Night Football. They had to make a cross-country flight. They had all sorts of running back issues, and none of that mattered because the game was not even competitive. You look at the stats, you almost want to vomit if you're a Jacksonville Jaguars supporter. The Niners ran for 171 yards. The Jaguars ran for 54. Trevor Lawrence, 16 of 25 for 158. I'll tell you, a lot of that was done in garbage time in the second half. Meanwhile, Jimmy Garoppolo, 16 of 22, 176 and two touchdowns. That was done while the game was somewhat still in question. The game started with a 13-minute, 20-play drive for San Francisco. I believe I heard Mike Dempsey on the way in say it was 16 seconds short of an all-time NFL record for the longest drive in the history of the National Football League. It took almost the entire first quarter. Leon, have you ever seen anything close to that?
No, in my collegiate or professional career, I've never been a part of anything like that. I've been a part of like some 8, 9, 10 play drives, but not no 20 play drive. You're talking about taking up almost damn near the whole quarter.
13 minutes and 5 seconds.
But see, we talked about this last week. We talked about that the Jaguars seem to be a team that freelances, that has no identity. 49ers coming here, they let you know from play one, this is what we do. We run the ball, we play action, we run misdirection, we take our shots down the field. So they have an identity. They're going to run the ball 70% of the time. They're going to pass it 30% of the time. They're going to play solid defense. That's a team right now that struggled early on in the season, and now they've got a nice little run, and now they're back in the playoff hunt because they're 5-5.
You know, you look at the Jaguars as well. On that drive, they were the 49ers were helped by defensive penalties in the Jaguar backfield, including Rayshon Jenkins. And then Rayshon Jenkins decided that he would throw a punch. Really, it was an open-handed slap,
it was a slap,
but whatever.
Yeah, it was terrible.
At Juwan Jennings of the 49ers.
By the way, this guy has a C on his chest.
Yeah, Rayshon Jenkins, a team captain. Yeah. A team captain gets ejected for throwing a punch. That is absolute nonsense. And that's
it's an embarrassment.
It's shameful is what it is.
It's absolute embarrassment. I mean, the team picked this guy to represent as the team captain, and he doesn't have a level head enough to just walk away. Now, I saw the play while he got upset because the guy got the best of him. So there's a little scuffle going on. The guy's helmet comes off, but you don't slap the guy because now the guy that you bring in behind you is not equipped like you are, you know, because you're a starter. You've been paid like a starter. We need you on the field, not ejected from the game.
Rayshon Jenkins was also the guy that was taunting, was it Tennessee when they were up by 20? No, yeah. It was Seattle. That's what it was. It was Seattle. He got caught for a taunting penalty in Seattle when Seattle was up 24-0. And I said at the time, what on earth are you saying to Seattle's offensive players when they're beating you 24-0 to warrant a taunting penalty, well, trailing by 24? Same thing today. I mean, you want to get back at the 49ers, get back at them on the field. Don't slap the guy. I mean, that's really showing him. Because then you get tossed. They bring in Daniel Thomas. He was admirable but couldn't do the job you were supposed to do. The whole thing was ridiculous.
What it is nonsense. This needs to be handled internally within the players on the team. I mean, they just need to address this. That's why I always question the leadership on this team, because someone needs to come in here and say, listen, bro, we can't have you out of games. I mean, it's bad enough, you know, that we're struggling as a team, but you know, you're the team captain. We can't afford to have you ejected from the game. So somebody on that inside that locker room has got to address this, which they probably won't, because you know they'll probably dap him up and say, "Oh yeah, man, he was cuffing with." Instead of coming at him real and saying, "Hey, look, you're the team captain. We need you on the field, bro. You got to be a little bit more level headed than that. You can't, you know, get tossed from the game when we need you, especially back there in that secondary where, you know, there's a lot of inexperience."
Marvin Jones, 4 grabs, 52 yards today, led the Jaguars in receiving. He did not have a catch until 6 minutes to go in the game, so all of that was incomplete and total garbage time. Laviska Shenault, 5 for 50. That included a fumble right out of the gate, which led to points for the 49ers. Nobody else after Shenault and Jones had more than 20 yards receiving, which leads me to Dan Arnold. Dan Arnold was arguably, after James Robinson, your best offensive player, non-quarterback, obviously, coming into today's game. How on this planet does Dan Arnold go without a catch? That's bad enough. He did not get a target. Leon, in 60 minutes of football, they did not throw the ball one time to their best down-the-field player in Dan Arnold.
Well, think about this, Hack, now, because the other team watches film, and they've had to watch Dan Arnold for the last couple of weeks, and they say, listen, this offense goes through Dan, so what we're going to do is we're going to take away Dan and force the outside receivers to make plays, which they can't. They can't get any separation. So that might be one of the reasons why Dan Arnold didn't have any catches, because maybe the defense took him away.
Did the Jaguars watch film on the 49ers?
Yes, they probably did.
They probably saw Brandon Ayuk, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
He had 7 targets. They see George Kittle on film?
They sure did.
He had 4 targets. Everybody watches film. Mm-hmm. You find ways to get players the ball, man. Well, and to not get Dan Arnold the ball is absolutely ridiculous.
You've got to scheme a way to get him open.
Ugh. Good.
Right now, you got to run your offense through Dan Arnold because he's been the only consistent catcher on the team.
641-1010 is the phone number. We'll take a couple of calls in the first segment. Again, it's going to be a little different here on the fifth quarter. Obviously, a lot of Jaguars, but we are going to talk about Dan Mullen getting fired with the University of Florida, as we will shift gears and do a little Gator coverage as well later on here on the fifth quarter. Let's go to St. John's County to kick things off. Let's get Xavier in on here on 1010XL. Xavier, what do you got?
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Xavier, after a 30-10 game, man, we are just absolutely wonderful.
Hey, I'm living a dream.
It's just terrible to watch. I saw earlier today, the 49ers had 0 penalties, and the Jaguars are undisciplined and stuff. It sucks. It's terrible. It was terrible and stuff. We were sitting at the stadium today, and the 49ers were chanting and stuff. It's just terrible, and I'm just tired of going to these games diligently and us losing. I'll take it off the air.
It's a bad spot to be in when the fan base sounds like that.
Yeah, now, heck, think about that. Now, it was assault and battery what the 49ers did to the Jaguars today in the game. But just think about that. When 70% of your offense is running the football, no holdings, no illegal procedures. I mean, if you're running the mass majority of your offense is equipped to run the football and there's no holdings, that's a disciplined team. They had absolutely no penalties, no procedure penalties, no holding penalties throughout the whole game.
You played 11 years in the NFL. You played 5 years at Miami with the red shirt, and you obviously played 1 year in college. By my count, that's 17 years of football for Leon Searcy. Have you ever in your life seen a situation where the team was going to punt the ball and the punter didn't go out there? Everybody was out there to punt the ball except the punter, and the punter wasn't out there, so they had to take a delay of game.
I have never seen that before. Had.
That was a new one for me. And look, credit the Jaguars because they find new ways to impress us. I've never seen the punt team go out there without the punter.
Well, at least you know the punter wasn't into the game. Obviously, he had distractions. You know, maybe go pick up a tree after the game, maybe take his wife shopping, the kids, go see Santa, all that kind of stuff might have been in play because obviously he wasn't paying attention to the game where he should have been out there when the punt team was out there.
Let's go to Buffalo, get Junior in on the fifth quarter on 1010XL. Junior, what's going on?
Hey, man. Thanks for being my weekly therapy session because I'm going to need it. But, man, what a dysfunctional game. To see one team look like a professional football, NFL football team, and the other not. I know we got a lot of problems, but, oh, my God. They gave new meaning to playing badly. Like you just said, with Cook not coming out. When I was looking at that, I'm like, where's the kicker? What was he thinking? What was he on? Oh, it's just another opportunity lost. This is where I want to be. I want the Jaguars to be like the team like San Francisco. They got it together. Players, head coaches, the whole management, they have it together. Why can't the Jaguars get to that spot?
Junior, and Junior, you're a loyal fan. We certainly appreciate you calling in every week. I'm sorry for guys like you that have to watch some of this every week, quite frankly. And I'll tell you what else, too. The Jaguar game ended at 3:45. So it ended early. So I went to the red zone. And I was flipping around red zone and watching the last 15, 20 minutes of all these other games. And whether it was the Detroit-Cleveland game, whether it was Chicago and Baltimore, which was a great finish, Green Bay-Minnesota, a phenomenal finish, great finish in Washington-Carolina, all these other 1 o'clock games that went down to the wire, man alive. What I watched on those games looked different than what we saw here in Jacksonville. This did not look like the Jaguars were in the same league as some of these other teams today. It looked like the minor leagues compared to some of these other teams today. And unfortunately, that brings back horrible memories from the last couple of years where we were in the black hole of the NFL.
Well, see, I knew this game. The 49ers came into this game 4-5. They had just came off an emotional win against their rivals, the Rams. They beat them on Monday night. And they're in the driver's seat, right? Not in the driver's seat, but they're in a position right now where they're making a playoff push. And I said last week, if the Jaguars don't meet the intensity and energy of the team that's trying to make a playoff push, they're going to get beat. They're going to get mud stomped. And that's what happened. The Jaguars' energy out there was not the same as the 49ers. The 49ers set the tempo from the first drive, 20 plays. Now, they didn't score a touchdown, but they erased 13 minutes of that game. And they let the Jaguars know what they were going to do. They kicked the field goal. Then they turned right around, and we fumble, and they scored up 10. I'm telling you, the Jaguars, these teams that the Jaguars are going to be placing down the stretch are in pole position to try to get themselves situated in the playoffs. And then if they play another team that's in the position to try to make the playoffs, they are going to get beat like that every week.
Well, the good thing is after a 20-play, 13-minute drive, the defense got a lot of nourishing rest when the Jaguar offense went out there. And I went 3 and out in 26 seconds. And the defense was right back on the field. It is the Window World of Northeast Florida. Fifth quarter, as always, we are presented by Jacksonville's area Napa Auto Care Centers and Dr. George Barry and Barry Orthopedics. If you're on the phone line, we'll do our best to get to you. Frank Frangie, the voice of the Jaguars, to not only talk about Jacksonville, but about the firing of Dan Mullen. He is coming up at the bottom of the hour with Leon Searcy, the Hacker Ryan Green with you. So very glad you're with us on a Sunday evening here in Duval County. It's 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
The Window World of Northeast Florida Fifth Quarter, presented by Jacksonville Area Napa Auto Care Centers
and Dr. George Barry and Barry Orthopedics
on 1010XL.
With Leon Searcy, the Hacker, Ryan Green with you. It is the fifth quarter on 1010XL and 92.5 FM. More of your phone calls in just a moment, as we do every week here on the fifth quarter. Let's give you an offensive player of the game. It is brought to you by the Money Pages Red Zone. Here is the Money Pages Red Zone offensive player of the game.
Now, the Money Pages Red Zone play of the game. Money Pages, Jacksonville's trusted leader, helping businesses grow for 20 years.
Leon Searcy doing 8 years of the fifth quarter. There are some Sundays where it's harder to choose offensive players of the game than others. This was not an easy task, but we've sifted all the print. We've gone through all the analytics. And we're going to give it to Trevor Lawrence because actually got 181 yards of offense today, doing essentially everything by himself because he has no help on this team. So Trevor Lawrence, because he has no help, still accounted for 158 through the air, 23 on the ground, and that's a miracle with how bad the offense was around him.
You know what? This is like street ball when I back in the day when they pick teams and then the best player on the team shows up and you're not going to put him on the better team. You got to put him on the bad team to kind of make things equal. That's what Trevor is right now. He's on a very, very bad team with limited amount of options, and the talent pool is very, very shallow.
Back to the phone lines we go at 641-1010. Again, a little different fifth quarter today. Usually it's 100% Jaguar. It'll be some Jaguar. But certainly want to get reaction down about the Dan Mullen firing in Gainesville. Frank Frangie, Dan Hicken, Matt Hayes, among others, will join us in the next 90 minutes or so. In fact, we'll begin with Frank Frangie coming up here in about 15 minutes. Let's go to Ortega. Let's get Reed up here on 1010XL. Reed, go ahead.
Ryan, Leon, pleasure to talk to you guys. You guys do a great job and put on a great show. I got two things to say. Number one, we are a franchise in the National Football League, and we have our head coach being Urban Meyer sitting on the sideline, not interacting with the team. He's got his – every time I see him, I sit 15 rows up from, our home side, our field line, and he sits there, and he just has his hands on his knees, like, the whole game. He doesn't interact with his players, doesn't interact with other coaches. Is he worthy of being an NFL football coach? Is my first question. The second question goes towards Trevor Lawrence and his progression. I'm just wondering, with the fact that, you know, he has no weapons and he isn't really, I mean, is he going to develop properly? Like, I'm just worried that we finally got a good draft pick, and I just don't want him to fall apart and I would like to get y'all's opinion on both of those subjects.
Hey, Reed, thank you for the nice words. Certainly appreciate you listening. Trevor Lawrence is hopefully going to be the quarterback here for well over the next decade. I'm not necessarily worried about 10 games. I'll say what I said last week. It is concerning to me that Mac Jones looks like he does and Trevor looks like he does, although after today's performance, I at least have to succumb to the realization as well that Mac has much better coaches. I won't say better personnel. I'll say better coaches around him than what Trevor Lawrence does. What is your reaction to Urban, though, Leon? Because a lot of people have talked about his body language on the sideline.
I'm not buying that. Listen, Urban Meyer does not play the game. He coaches the game, all right? Let's put some emphasis on these players who are very well-paid professionals to go out and execute and do a job, and right now they're not. They're not doing the job. They're not doing the job to the level of expectations of the franchise, and because essentially, if you got to look at it, we're not that talented. We don't have the talent that we need on both sides of the ball. But that doesn't mean you can't go out there and execute, and you know, and be professional like Rayshon, you know, getting ejected because he's high-headed, and that means you're not disciplined. Your captain gets ejected from the game. So I'm not putting this on Urban Meyer, this whole notion that his body language is bad. And listen, I played in the league 11 years. I never cared what Coughlin looked like or Cower looked like or Jimmy looked like. I just was out there. I had to do my job and play the game of football. So I'm not buying into the players are not responding to Urban because of his body language on the side. And as far as Trevor Lawrence goes, his development is only going to be established if he gets some protection and he gets some receivers to get open and an established run grade. If you want to see his progressions, those three things have to happen. He has to have the pocket. He has to have the protection. He has to have the run game. He needs the weapons that can get open.
Let's go to the north side. Let's get Dave in here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM. Dave, go ahead.
Hey, Hack. Hey, Leon.
What's going on, Dave?
Hey, how's it going? Sorry to hear about Dan Mullen. I think he's a great coach to me. So I just, you know, I love the Gators and I love him as a personal coach. I like to see, that's what the Jaguars, I like to see maybe they go to a bunch set, maybe two tight ends, or something different to see how that works. You know, it'll be something different. So I think that might make a little difference. I understand that the team and the players are not where they should be, but I think next year we'll have beat threats coming back and much better players. So that's kind of my take on it. So,
Dave, appreciate the phone call. Here's what I would do about the Jaguar offense, Leon. I would take everything they did today and I would wad it up in the playbook and I would take like those 15 or 20 pages out that say, you know, 49er game plan, if you will, and I would yank them out of the playbook and I would set them on fire. And I would never run hardly anything that you saw today because nothing worked. I'm even sad to say that like Marvin Jones had 52 yards receiving because they were the most pointless yards in Jaguar history. There were 5 minutes to go and the game was over. I mean, literally, Trevor Lawrence was lucky to have 100 yards passing today. The Jaguars were lucky to have 200 total yards of offense. The only reason they had 200 yards of offense is the 49ers went into a prevent there in the fourth quarter when they're up by 27 points. Let's squeeze one more in before we get to Frank Frangie again. If you're on the phone lines, we will get to you. Let's go to Tallahassee. Let's get Jonathan in on the fifth quarter on 1010XL. Jonathan, what do you got?
Well, first off, Rayshon Jenkins needs to basically have much more class than that because, I mean, come on, you can't throw a punch in the NFL. Wasn't Leonard Fournette a captain and he threw a punch?
Yeah,
I
believe he was in the Buffalo game, yeah.
Yeah, but still, that doesn't excuse the fact. And also, Logan Cook, I mean, I don't know what he was thinking about not being out there with the team when it was time to punt. But, Logan, you got to pay attention, my man.
Jonathan, appreciate it. Just goes to show you how unorganized at times the Jaguars are. And, Leon, it was at time a comedy of errors.
It is. And your team is a reflection of your coaching. So I don't know what the hell they're doing throughout the week. But to go out there and perform the way they performed today, you had to put the coaching staff in question. These guys, are they prepared enough to execute on Sundays? Because they look like a follies out there half the time today when I watched the play.
It is the Window World of Northeast Florida fifth quarter. We are presented by Jacksonville's area, Napa Auto Care Centers, and Dr. George Barry and Barry Orthopedics. With Leon Searcy, the Hacker, Ryan Green, with you, Frank Frangie, the voice of the Jacksonville Jaguars, set to join us coming up in just a moment as well. Want to get his reaction on Dan Mullen no longer being the head coach with the University of Florida. It's a Sunday evening here in Jacksonville, and we're glad you're with us on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Putting an extra 60 minutes on the clock. The Window World of Northeast Florida fifth quarter. Presented by
Dr. George Barry and Barry Orthopedics.
And Jacksonville area Napa Auto Care Centers on 1010XL.
Play-by-play voice of the Jacksonville Jaguars, Frank Frangie, 60 seconds away before we get there. Every week on the fifth quarter, we do give you a defensive player of the game. That player of the game is always brought to you by our friends at Superior Fence and Rail. Michael, let's do it right now. The Superior Fence and Rail Defensive Player of the Game.
Jacksonville's building a fence along the goal line. This is the Superior Fence and Rail Defensive Player of the Game. Superior Fence and Rail, where quality matters.
Tough day for the entire Jaguar team. I did think Miles Jack, though, played pretty well today. 12 tackles, 5 solo. Liani led the team in tackles, and as a result, Miles Jack is this week's defensive player of the game.
Well, he had to make the tackles. They'll still be running right now.
That's right. He was the last line of defense on a couple of those plays.
Yes, he was.
Let's bring in the voice of the Jaguars, Frank Frangie, to not only talk about the Jaguars, but certainly the situation surrounding the Dan Mullen firing at the University of Florida. Frank, how we doing?
I'm doing good, Hack. It was a tough weekend for the Gators and a tougher day for the Jaguars. So long weekend if you root for those two teams, for sure. I'm doing fine.
There's no question. We'll get to the Dan Mullen situation in just a moment. Let's begin with the game today. You had a bird's eye view calling the game here for the Jaguar Radio Network. Your reaction to what we saw, certainly Jaguar fans not very happy.
Yeah, I think two things. I think defensively they shot themselves in the foot on that 20-play drive. And throughout the first half, Hack, three different times in that football game, the defense would have gotten off the field if not for a defensive penalty. Now, look, against a team that's as efficient as that team is, you can't do that. It was going to be a tough go. They kind of found themselves against the Rams last week to the 49ers with a 31-10 win. They're physical. They want to run the football. They're going to beat you with 1,000 cuts. So when you have them stopped, you have to have them stopped. And I think that happened three different times. And then I think the defense wore down because the offense is just struggling so badly. At some point, you can't sugarcoat that anymore, Hack. The offense is really can't find its way. Nobody's open. Trevor's struggling. I really don't think it's all on him. I don't think anybody's open. There's no separation. Again, other than that one drive where the 49ers kind of sat back and let him score, how many times did you see the ball down the field? There's just nothing down the field. That's a gaping hole in what they're trying to do, and it's going to be hard to overcome it. If your offense is essentially scoring between 6 to 10 to 13 points every game out, it's going to be hard to win games for sure.
Now, Frank, my concern with the offense is that they don't seem to have any kind of real identity. When the 49ers came into this game, we know what the 49ers want to do. Kyle Shanahan wants to line up too tight, run the ball 70% of the time, and play action off of that. Jacksonville doesn't know what it wants to do. When I'm watching that game, I'm trying to figure out what are y'all trying to establish, the run game, the pass game. It doesn't look kosher.
No, Leon, I hear you. They have no identity because they're not sure what they can do yet. You know what I mean? If you sometimes your identity is what the coach wants it to be. Other times it's, guys, find what you can do, and that becomes your identity. Like defensively, they've become a zone blitzing team because they figured out that's what they can do. I don't know that Joe Cole – I think Joe Cullen wanted to come here and play man defensively, Leon, but they've become a zone team, a team that blitzes like crazy because that's what they could do. I'm not sure the offense has figured that out yet. I think James Robinson's a good back. He wasn't at full strength today. But he's not going to have any running lane if everybody's playing 8 in the box, and you can't loosen that up. So I think what they would like to be is a balanced team that runs more than passes, but they can't. They're not going to have any running lanes if they can't throw the ball deep a little bit. So I think the lack of identity, I think you're right, man. I think there's a lack of identity, but I think that lack of identity is because they're not sure what they're not sure who they can be yet, not who they want to be. I'm not sure they're sure who they can be yet, and they're still trying to find that out.
Frank Frangie here with us on the fifth quarter on 1010XL and 92.5 FM. All right, Frank, let's shift gears down to the University of Florida. Dan Mullen fired earlier today by Athletic Director Scott Strickland. Do you believe last night was the final straw, or even if they would have won that game last night, this was an inevitable decision?
I don't know that Scott knew what he was going to do before yesterday or before today. I don't know that. I haven't talked. Scott's a friend, but I haven't talked to him about that, Hack. You know this. Coaches don't get fired because of what they did wrong. You don't fire a coach because he lost this game or lost that game. You don't get fired because of what you did. You get fired when the athletic director no longer thinks it can get fixed with you at the helm. When the narrative becomes so negative, when the trajectory is wrong, when there's no momentum, when the AD no longer believes it can get turned around with you at the helm, then he looks for the next guy. That's what happened here. It's not like if it was, I'm mad at Dan Mullen because of what he did wrong this year, he wouldn't have got fired because Scott would say, wait a minute, I got to give him credit for what he did right the first 3 years. So it's not about you're fired because you did it wrong. You're fired because I no longer believe you can get it corrected. And so to your question, yeah, Hack, I think the longer it went on, the longer Scott Strickland had to start doubting whether or not this could get corrected. It was so negative. There was so much negativity out there. I think you got it right. I think you had to move on from Dan Mullen. Again, not because of what he did wrong, but because you never believed it could get fixed. Now, what he did wrong, he never got quarterback figured out. He played the wrong running back. He might have stayed with the defensive coordinator too long. The stuff he did wrong, you know, contributed to that narrative. I get that. But I think Scott Strickland looked up and said, this is not going to get fixed with Dan. There's too much negativity out there. I've got to find the next guy. And I think that's what happened.
Frank, it was December 12th last year. LSU comes into Gainesville. At that point, Dan Mullen had 28 wins and 6 losses as the head coach of the Florida Gators. We're talking not even a calendar year, and he's gone today. Have you ever seen anything like this?
Never. Heck, I'll go better than that. 2 months ago, when they played Alabama to a 2-point game and then beat Tennessee a week later, and the 1st of October, Hack, they were a top 10 team, and Dan Mullen was considered a top 10 coach. Forget about last December. This October, when they lost to Alabama by 2 points, everybody said Florida's building a monster. They've got one of the best coaches in America. Look out for the Gators. It crumbled in 2 months. I've never seen anything happen this quickly. Now, part of that is Mullen never figured out quarterback. I've said this 1,000 times, Hack. They didn't lose. The season didn't fall apart because of Todd Grantham. The season didn't fall apart because of bad recruiting. Now, they can't catch Alabama, Georgia, Clemson, Ohio State till they recruit better. But that's not why they lost 6 games. They didn't lose to Kentucky or Missouri or South Carolina because of recruiting, because quite frankly, they still have better rosters than those guys. They lost because he never figured out quarterback. And he got a little stubborn, and you can't win without quarterback play. And at the end of the day, bad quarterback play led to them losing 6 games and cost him his job.
Now, Frank, how do you stop the fire sale over the next couple of months? How do you retain your recruiting class and kids going to the portal? How important it is that you move forward and get your head coach in play?
Well, you're right, Leon. Fast, right? I hear you. And that's the challenge. Get the right guy fast before you start losing recruit after recruit after recruit. Remember, when they fired Jim McElwain, it was time for him to go. But that's when they lost Matt Corral. Yeah. And instead, and Dan Mullen went and signed Emory Jones. Matt Corral, for those that missed it, turned out pretty good. He was coming to Florida until you fired your coach.
They lost Jamar Chase, too.
Correct. And don't get me wrong, they needed to fire him. It was time. But you lost a guy that was in the Heisman Trophy running this year. So, yeah, to your question, Leon, they've got to move quickly. I get it. You got to get this one right. This is the most important hire of Scott Strickland's life. He hired Dan Mullen. If the next football coach doesn't pan out, that's probably going to be it for Scott. And Scott's a wonderful guy, and he's a friend. But he's smart. He has to get this one right. Even if your recruiting class isn't as good as you want it to be, if you get the right coach, and I think a lot of the names out there, Hacker, by now you certainly talked about the name, I would think, but you got to get this one right. This is critical.
All right, Frank, leave us with this. And again, appreciate you joining us on a Sunday evening. I'm going to take Billy Napier, Lane Kiffin, and Mario Cristobal. I'm going to give you the field. Who's right with the next Gator head coach?
There's only one on your list that I think it might be, and that's Napier. So I'll take the field. Cristobal, I think if he comes back to the state of Florida, he's going to go hang out with Leon and my buddy Gino Toretta down there in South Florida. I think I'm really interested to hear your thoughts on that, Leon. But I think if Cristobal, he's got a great job. I think USC really wants him. I think if he comes back to Florida, it's because the heartstrings pull him. He's from Miami. Those guys, all he and Leon played on that great offense, those great offensive lines down there. He won a national championship down there. So in my opinion, the only way he comes back to the state is I don't think he goes, even though Florida could pay more, I don't see Mario Cristobal picking Florida over Miami, and I think the Miami job is going to be open. I don't think they're hiring Lane Kiffin. As much as I'd love it, I don't think they're hiring Lane Kiffin. I just somehow, some way, don't see him as the Florida coach. I think Napier's in play. I think he's one of the 3 or 4 guys that's going to wind up with the job, Hack. So for me, I'll take the field, but I do think it could be Billy Napier. I think Billy Napier is going to get one of these jobs. Why not Florida? He's been under Saban. I think they like that about him. So I will tell you, this has been a myth that everybody's laughed about and joked about for all these years. It's the same as Bill Cowher's moving to Jacksonville and Tony Dungy's coming in, blah, blah, blah. But I would keep an eye on Bob Stoops on this one. He's 61 years old. I do think that the people close to him say for the first time he's talking about maybe trying to coach again one more time. He's going to have to do it now if he doesn't. He's not going to do it when he's 65 at all. I got a home close to Steve Spurrier. Steve Spurrier Jr. was on Stoops' staff. He's now on Mike Leach's staff. I think they'd love for him to come back. I don't know that Bob wants to do it. In fact, I would guess that he probably doesn't, Hack. But this is the one year I would keep an eye on the Bob Stoops. I think if Bob Stoops wants it, I don't think it matters who else is on the list. So I would keep an eye on him. Do I think he's going to be the coach? Probably not. Napier's probably the best guess. So I'll take the field. I'll tell you to keep an eye on Bob Stoops.
Frank Frangie, you'll get much more of him at 3 o'clock tomorrow afternoon on the Frangie Show. Thank you, Frank.
Okay, fellas, take care.
All right.
Play-by-play voice of the Jaguars, Frank Frangie.
You did not want to hear that, did you? Did not want to hear Cristobal to Miami.
Cristobal, I've kind of made my peace with that. I would love Cristobal. You need to have a fireworks display with this hire. Billy Napier may be a great coach. Is that going to move the needle for 18-year-old recruits that are looking at Georgia and Alabama and Clemson, Florida State? I don't know. Lane Kiffin would move the needle. Maybe just forget about all his past transgressions and look at the here and now. Look what he's doing with that Ole Miss football program now. You get Lane Kiffin and that brand new football facility in Gainesville that's coming. Dude, that to me is that's who I want.
That would excite you.
Yes.
Having Lane Kiffin.
Immensely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
All right. So you might keep – well, one of your quarterbacks is going to hit the portal if he chooses the other.
Well,
right?
We'll have to see now. Who knows? Now that Mullen's been fired, who knows what's going to happen between Emory Jones, Anthony Richardson? There are so many questions. That's why, you know, I would imagine in the next 2 to 3 weeks maximum, you probably have to have the new head coach in place. The first signing day is in a month. It's in December. You got to figure out what you're doing pretty quick here. That's why I think Florida acted a week early. To get a head start on the process. Dan Hicken will join us at the top of the 7 o'clock hour. Let's get back to the phone lines at 641-1010 with Leon Searcy, the Hacker, Ryan Green with you. Let's head to Callahan. Let's get John in here on the fifth quarter on 1010XL. John, go ahead.
Hey, gentlemen. It's a pleasure to talk with you. I've got one thing about the Jaguars. You know, they're always looking downfield, downfield, downfield. We don't have those receivers. Leon, how about a little 5-yard and 10-yard route? Let me put that to you. And I got this thing to say to you, Hack. You know, the thing of it is, why don't we bring back Scott Frost to Florida? I mean, he'd be perfect down there in Gainesville. And now I'm going to throw that to you, gentlemen, and I'm going to go have me another libation. Have a wonderful evening.
John, thank you. Enjoy your libation. All right. Scott Frost is not coming to Florida. Leon, no, your thoughts on the Jaguars going downfield.
That's all we do is throw 5-10-yard routes. We don't have any receiver that has any breakaway speed. That's all I've been looking at is dinks and dunks. All right? That's the problem we have, that we don't have anybody that could stretch the defense.
We threw the ball downfield once today to John Brown.
John Brown, yes.
John Brown making it happen.
Yes, he did. Absolutely.
It was. It's a comedy of errors on offense. And I think, look, I think the obvious thing now, they didn't know DJ Chark was going to get hurt, so you got to take that into account. They did not do enough at wide receiver. And I'm as guilty of as anybody. What did we all say? Chenault, Jones, and Chark coming into the year might be pretty good. Pretty nice trio. And it is completely blown up in the Jaguars' face.
I mean, my problem with the team is that they've accepted the play that they're playing at. And these are well-paid professionals. And to get that every Sunday, that's an embarrassment. That is a straight embarrassment when you've got paid professionals making millions of dollars who can't make plays on Sundays. That's terrible. It's awful.
Let's go to the south side, get Gary in here on 1010XL. Gary, what's going on?
Ryan, Leon, happy Thanksgiving, guys.
Same to you, man.
Appreciate it.
Hey, you know, guys, it's like with what Dan Mullen was being paid, it's like he coached with a gun and a mask the last couple of years since the beginning of October last year. How, Ryan, with the Gators, with all their renown, be ranked in the 30s in rivals in the recruiting? You know, Frank says, well, it's not so much recruiting. Did Dan Mullen's personality turn that many top recruits off? Because I've heard a couple players say, you know, he's kind of standoffish. He was turned off. Was Dan Mullen really that bad, Ryan, in recruiting?
Gary, appreciate the phone call. Here's what I'll tell you about Dan Mullen in recruiting. Do I know the type of personality Dan Mullen is? Oh, I mean, I've met the man a couple of times in passing. We've had him on the radio a few times. I'm not going to go as far as say I know Dan Mullen. I know high school coaches that I talk to, both in Jacksonville and beyond. Keep in mind, I covered recruiting for a couple of years with Gridiron and then with 1010XL, basically in the southeastern part of the country. And I have heard, and I like that's why when I say Dan Mullen's not a good recruiter, I don't just conjure that out of thin air. This is what I've been told by high school coaches and by recruits themselves through the past 4 and 5 years that Dan Mullen is not a good recruiter. Dan Mullen really doesn't enjoy recruiting. Guys like Kirby Smart, you know why Kirby's so unbelievably good at it? Because he loves it. He eats and breathes recruiting. When those recruits come in on visits, they have a whole plan at Georgia. I mean, I've talked to Denny Thompson about this, who's been with recruits up there in Athens on visits. From the time they touch down at the airport to the time they meet the coaches to the time they tour the campus, it is as organized and as exceptional as you could possibly imagine. I mean, they go here, 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 all the best things, all within the rules.
Allegedly.
But all the best things. I talked to a person inside the Florida program that works with the recruits, a guy inside the University of Florida program. I bring up Georgia recruiting. He just shook his head, said, whew. They're not competing with Georgia on the recruiting trail. So I don't know if Dan Mullen got fired for not being a good recruiter or not, but I will tell you this. He was not a good recruiter, and that was always my main issue with Dan Mullen.
Well, you got to look at the best teams of college football. The best teams in college football had the best players on their teams, and they're usually in the top, what, 5 or 10 when it comes to recruiting? The Ohio States, the Alabamas, the Clemsons, the Georgias. I mean, you could just look at, and the Clemsons fell off a little bit, but those teams, and listen, it's a 24-hour job, and I was at little old FIU, and I understood that recruiting, you're going to spend 18 to 20 hours of your day recruiting, calling kids, setting up visits, going to different schools, having an interaction with the high school coaches, building relationships, watching film, all that kind of stuff. And if you got a coach like Kirby Smart who loves it so much, he eats, sleeps, and breathes that. That's why Georgia's on top, because of him. Because it ain't about X's and O's, it's about Jimmys and Joes. And he's got plenty of them on this team.
And I never take anything away from Dan Mullen's X's and O's. I thought Dan Mullen, and I still believe Dan Mullen, is a terrific X's and O's guy. But all you need to know is this. Emory Jones was the first quarterback under Mullen. Trask and Felipe were Jim McElwain guys. You know? I mean, think about that for a second. He developed them. That goes into the X's and O's part of it. But he did not recruit Kyle Trask. He did not recruit Felipe Franks. Jim McElwain did. Some guys are X's and O's guys. That's Mullen. Some guys are great recruiters. That's Kirby. But if you're a great recruiter, maybe you don't need to necessarily be such a great X's and O's guy for your team to still have success. And Kirby even mentioned that here at the cocktail party. He's like, I don't know a coach alive that beats recruiting. If you got 5-star guys, maybe you can be a 3-star coach. I think Dan Mullen's proved that if you get 3-star guys, even if you're a 5-star X's and O's guy, that may not matter at the end of the day. Let's get one more in on this side. If you're on the phone lines, we will get to you. Let's head down to Port St. Lucie. Let's get Keith up here on 1010XL. Keith, what do you got?
Hey, guys. Hope you guys have a good Thanksgiving.
Thank you, buddy.
Quick note about the Gators. You know what? Ballin had to go, but how about this? Lane Kiffin as a head coach. Ed Orgeron as a defensive coordinator. Now I'm going to go to the Jaguars. Man, as a season ticket holder, it's frustrating to see the lack of discipline on the team, the punter not making it out there, the late substitutions, the third down penalties on the defense. I mean, it's, as a season ticket holder, it's really hard to see that. But I got a question for you guys. All right, so from this team compared to 2 years ago, how different is this team except for the coaching staff? I mean, we won games with a backup quarterback. How different is the personnel from this team to that team? And I'm going to take my comments out there. Thanks.
Keith, appreciate the phone call. Leon, is this Jaguar team any better than the team in 2019 or 2020?
Well, I tell you this. The quarterback play was a lot better, and that was Minshew. Minshew, I mean, as much as we want to talk about Trevor Lawrence, he is struggling right now. He's a rookie. But you got to remember, Gardner Minshew was a 6th-round pick. And he came in as the backup, and this team caught on fire, to be quite honest with you. Well, it took him to 4-5 at one particular time.
They were four. Four and four.
And I think that there's a lot more. He had a lot more talent around him, I believe. But that team played a lot better than this team is playing right now. This team right now is a folly. You know, it's a cartoon, to be quite honest.
We've tried to erase last year from our minds. After 10 games last year, they were 1-9. This year, they're 2-8. It's not a big improvement. There is certainly no question about that. More of your phone calls. Also, more on Dan Mullen being let go at the University of Florida. Dan Hicken, the media mogul, joins us at the top of the hour. It is the Window World of Northeast Florida. Fifth quarter, we are presented by Jacksonville's area, Napa Auto Care Centers, and Dr. George Barry and Barry Orthopedics. With Leon Searcy, the Hacker Ryan Green with you. 1 hour down, 1 hour to go. Here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Bringing you an extra quarter of football.
The Window World of Northeast Florida fifth quarter. Presented by Jacksonville Area Napa Auto Care Centers.
And Dr. George Barry and Barry Orthopedics.
On 1010XL.
With Leon Searcy, the Hacker Ryan Green with you. Busy day. Here in the city of Jacksonville, the Jaguars lose by 20, although that's kind of normal at this point. The Florida Gators fire Dan Mullen. That's certainly not normal. So Dan Hicken, 60 seconds away. We'll get his thoughts on both. As we do every week here on the fifth quarter, we give you a special teams player of the game. It is brought to you by the McKeever Clinic. And let's do it right now. The McKeever Clinic special teams player of the game.
Now, the special teams player of the game.
We be special!
Brought to you by the urological specialists of McKeever Clinic.
After a couple of down weeks, Matthew Wright take a bow. Made a 30-yard kick and made his extra point, Leon, something that has not been guaranteed
nice.
For the Jaguars this year. So Matthew Wright had two opportunities, converted on both the field goal and the extra point, and he is this week's McKeever Clinic special teams player of the game. With that, let's get to the media mogul, Dan Hicken. You hear him, you love him every morning as part of the drill. He's with us now on the fifth quarter. Dan, how we doing?
I'm disappointed, Hacker, that you and Leon did not name Logan Cook for sitting on the bench during the fourth down. I said that during the break.
Dan, I said that during the break. That's who should have been the winner.
I've never seen a punter do that. The entire punt team goes out there without the punter.
I can't even remember one that happening in college or high school, quite honestly, but that was another great moment for the Jaguars. I'm doing okay. Another lousy football weekend for yours truly and a lot of Jaguar fans. Obviously, a disappointing performance. And right in the middle of the game, we get word that really no surprise Dan Mullen being fired. I thought they would let him finish out the season, but to make the decision. And then Mullen obviously had the opportunity to coach if he wanted to on Saturday, he said, no thanks, give me my $12 million, I'm out of here. But just no surprise, because he really hasn't coached in the last month, guys.
There's no question. Dan, I brought this up with Frangie earlier. You go back to December 12th last year,
yeah.
Marco Wilson throws a shoe. That point, Dan Mullen had 28 wins and I believe 6 losses. What on earth happened in the last 11 months?
It's really one of the most... I mean, you could do a 30 for 30 on this one. The fall, how fast the fall happened. I think taking LSU lightly. Obviously, that's where it started. You played well against you battled Bama best you could, but that whole attitude for the Cotton Bowl game. I don't know if that permeated into the program. The whole we won't have our team. Our practice squad did pretty good out there. You know that whole. You know, I just felt like right there, things got a little off, and then, you know, it just went bad this year, went bad with his quarterbacks. And, you know, if you just look at it outside the program, guys, you might say, gee whiz, what's going on at Florida, man? The guy won 10 games, he won 11 games, he went to 3 New Year's Six Bowls, and he did. But if you follow the program like we follow the program, I think, most everybody understands why he was fired today, because there really is no hope on the horizon. And once you lose hope, you got problems. I mean, as far as recruiting, as far as what's coming down the pike, and as far as what, you know, if he had closed out November with 4 straight wins and went 8-4 and went to a bowl game and battled and kind of got momentum going again for next year, he would have got another, he would have been back next year. He couldn't even do that. Couldn't beat South Carolina. Well, you start losing the teams that you are favored against, heavily favored against, that's a problem.
Now, Dan, is there going to be any backlash? You know, it's senior day against Florida State, and he's kind of taking his walking papers on these kids he recruited. Is there any backlash from the Florida fans about him skipping that game?
I think there's already so much backlash, Leon, from Gator Nation towards Dan Mullen. This is just the icing on the cake, but for sure. But like I said, I mean, we're not surprised because a lot of folks felt like he hadn't been coaching the last month. I mean, you watched last night. I mean, to have the ball with 1:04 left on the road with a chance to go win the game and play for overtime, to play not to lose. I mean, Leon, you know that. You can't. I mean, just the way he was acting the last few weeks, it was bad, and this will just make it worse. But it's not going to be a pretty day, I don't think, in the Swamp on Saturday.
Couple of more for Dan Hick, and you get him every morning here on The Drill on 1010XL and 92.5 FM. Dan, the four names that I guess are circulating the most, Lane Kiffin, Billy Napier, Mario Cristobal, and Bob Stoops. Do you believe any of those four? Are there any other names that you're hearing or that, quite frankly, you would want to hear?
Well, just to the guys I've talked to, the two names I've heard are Napier's job if he wants it, and Luke Fickell is another name to keep an eye on.
Interesting.
Those are the two names that I've heard most prominently. I think everybody always says, you got to make a call to Stoops, and that's fine. Make a call to Stoops. I mean, I would hope this, guys, and I don't, Leon, you may know this better than me. You decide to fire your coach, and especially in a season where there's some concern about the candidates out there, I would hope, at least through the back channels, you know who would at least be interested in your program. At least would you know, okay, well, I know if I call this guy and I give him, you know, $20 million for 4 years, he's coming. You know, that's what I would hope. And this is obviously a huge hire for Scott Strickland, who's under fire of his own. So this is it for him. If he misses on this one, he won't be the athletics director much longer at the University of Florida. So, but the two names that I've heard most prominently are Napier. In fact, Napier to me is maybe the lead guy, and then Fickell is the other name that I've heard. So, and again, we'll see. I mean, you know, that's always, we're going to hear all these names. Those are the two that have been mentioned to me.
Well, Dan, I asked Frank this earlier. How soon do you stop this fire sale? Because, you know, kids going into portals, being negatively recruited against. How soon is it that Florida needs to get this quarterback decision? I mean, this coaching decision made.
ASAP, in my opinion. But you can't risk getting the wrong guy. If you have three guys you want to talk to, you better talk to them. But you better talk to them quickly, because you're right. I mean, there's so much at stake. And it's such a year-to-year thing. You've got to re-recruit the kids at your program. You've got to try to salvage whatever you can from high school, although it's so bad right now. You get a new coach with new enthusiasm, and if you get him before, you know, mid-December, if you get him here in a week or two, he might be able to add a couple guys. Who knows, you know? And then you got to, of course, hit, like you said, the portal. So there's a lot of work to be done. It's always a tough time. And generally speaking, you usually lose a recruiting class, and you just try to put it together, salvage it the best you can. But whoever it is, my goodness, they better be able to recruit guys, because that's obviously been hugely missing at the University of Florida.
Hey, Dan, leave us with this in regards to Billy Napier. Now, 7-7 in 2018, so that offsets his overall record a little bit. But he's gone 11-3, 10-1, 10-1 the last 3 years. The guy just racks up wins there with the Ragin' Cajuns of Louisiana. What do you tell Gator fans, though? Because this is the concern they have, at least that I've heard about Napier. Well, we did that once with McIlwain, went to a smaller school, and it kind of blew up in their face. Is that a concern for you?
Yeah, it is a concern, but you know what? I think you have to, like, would you be concerned if you hired some hotshot assistant? We tried that with Muschamp. I mean, you try everything. We've tried everything. You just got to get a good coach. You know, everybody's searching for the next great coach, and wherever you get him shouldn't be that big of a deal if you have a good feel from him. I think he certainly has enough experience. He's being a head coach is a great thing, obviously. I'm open to anything, man. If you found me, Hacker or Leon, if you came to me and, like, if Leon seriously told me, I'm telling you guys, this assistant coach I know has been an assistant for, you know, 10 years, and he's moved around, and he's unbelievable at recruiting, and he's going to be a head coach one day, and he's an up-and-comer. You know, and people would say, you're crazy. You can't give the keys. You know, they would say, you can't give the keys to a Porsche to a guy who hasn't driven before. Well, yeah, you can if he knows how to drive. Ask Kirby Smart in Athens about that, by the way.
Yeah.
Seems to work pretty well for him. So, I don't know. I'm not that concerned about that. I just want to get the right guy, whoever it may be. And that's what I'm hoping for.
Dan Hicken. Dan, appreciate you joining us on a Sunday night. We'll get a lot more of you beginning tomorrow at 7 a.m. on the drill.
Go Jags.
Hick, appreciate it. Dan Hicken, you'll get him tomorrow alongside Jeff Prosser. Billy Napier, that seems to be a name that's certainly out there. Only 42 years of age. And again, 10-3, 10-1 so far the last 3 years there at Louisiana.
I can tell by your voice, it doesn't move the needle, really.
I need.
I can tell. You're not enthralled by that.
You know what's funny, though? You know what's funny? You're right.
Yeah.
Did Urban Meyer move the needle for me when he came from Utah? No.
True.
Will Muschamp moved the needle for me, and it was a bad hire. So I think Dan's right. You got to get the right guy. My concern is that I wanted shock and awe, and I don't know if Billy Napier is shock and awe. I need to get the tension away from Kirby a little bit with these recruits. I think Lane Kiffin would be shock and awe.
Mm-hmm.
I think Mario Cristobal would be shock and awe. But then you got to ask yourself as well, once that shock wears off in a year or two, who's the better football coach? And maybe it would be Billy Napier. And if you start winning games, that'll build up the shock and awe for you on the field anyway.
Yeah, I mean, you want. Like, I agree with Dan. You want a steady coach who can recruit and can develop players. You know, you want. I see what you want the wow factor, you know, but sometimes you might just get strong and steady. If he's strong and steady, you could be good with that, right?
Jaguars, I would be good with that. There's no question about that. Strong and steady wins the race. Jaguars did not win the race today. They lose to San Francisco 30-10. Back to Jaguar phone calls at 641-1010. Again, more on the Florida Gators head coaching vacancy as well coming up in about 15 minutes. To Ortega we go. Let's get Ellie up here on 1010XL. Ellie, go ahead.
Hey, Hacker and Leon. I just want to say thank you for being such dedicated Jaguars fans. I just want to let you know I'm still enjoying my fellowship and camaraderie today, even given this upsetting Jaguars loss. I have one question. So we have so much energy that we end up putting into this team. They end up fighting each other, or the other team, obviously, as we saw on the field today with like four penalties on that play. Why don't we put that energy into a game like that AFC playoff game against the Bills in 2017?
It's a fair point. I mean, you could ask yourself a lot of questions. Why don't you put energy into understanding where you are in the game so Logan Cook knows to go out there on a punt? He is the punter. You could ask yourself, why don't we put energy into calling up plays to get wide receivers open? Why does so many other teams have non-Pro Bowl talent at wide receiver, yet they find ways to get their guys open, and the Jaguars seemingly don't? Why don't they put an energy down to secure the football? Laviska Shenault makes a play, gets punched out. That's a momentum-changing play. On third down, DeJuan Smoot gets a sack, and Rayshon Jenkins is called for holding. It's just one thing after another, Leon, and it's Groundhog Day. We've seen it over and over again.
Well, this team has to realize it's not good enough to overcome the mistakes and silly penalties that transpired throughout the game. They're just not. The silly penalties, the ejections, the legal procedures, the offsides, all that kind of – the fumbles. This team is not good enough. This team essentially has to play a perfect game, out-execute their opponents on both sides of the ball, to just be in the game. It's very frustrating to me to see trained professionals who pay very well just go out there and give you a lackluster performance like we've been getting all over the last couple of Sundays.
Every week here on the fifth quarter, we do give you a drive of the game. That drive of the game is always brought to you by Tire Outlet. Let's do it right now, Michael. The Tire Outlet drive of the game.
Now, the Tire Outlet drive of the game. Tire Outlet, wholesale prices, premium service.
Well, when you have one touchdown, odds are that's probably going to be the drive of the game, and it is. You're trailing 30-3, but the Jaguars do go on an 8-play, 75-yard drive. Took 2 minutes and 29 seconds off the clock. James Robinson punches it in at the goal line to make it 30-10. That would be your final score, and that James Robinson touchdown did cap off the Tire Outlet drive of the game.
That's just like the Washington Generals scoring on the Globetrotters and they're up by 60. That's all it is.
Or if James Robinson's on your fantasy team, you probably appreciate it.
Yeah, that's all it is, bro.
It's one of those deals.
It smells of garbage time.
That's and we've seen it for years.
Yes, we have.
For years and years and years. Garbage time touchdowns, a thing of normalcy here in the city of Jacksonville. He is Leon Searcy. I'm the Hacker Ryan Green. We're with it at 8 o'clock. It is the Window World of Northeast Florida. Fifth quarter, we are presented by Jacksonville's area, Napa Auto Care Centers, and Dr. George Barry and Barry Orthopedics. We'll come back. More on the Jaguars, more of your phone calls at 641-1010, and more on the firing of Dan Mullen in Gainesville. Why did he get fired? Who are they going to hire? Is it a slam dunk for Billy Napier? We'll talk with Matt Hayes, our partner on XL Primetime and national college football writer. That's next here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
This is the Window World of Northeast Florida Fifth Quarter, presented by
Dr. George Barry and Barry Orthopedics
and Jacksonville Area Napa Auto Care Centers on 1010XL.
The give to James Robinson leans toward the end zone. Touchdown. A one-yard touchdown run by James Robinson, and the Jags are in the end zone for the first time today.
Frank Franchi on the call, Jaguars Radio, James Robinson. You can tell he's gimpy out there, Leon. He's certainly not 100%, but he's battling through. He did find the end zone today. Every week here on the fifth quarter, we do give you a play of the game. That play of the game is brought to you by Performance Painting. Let's do it right now. The Performance Painting play of the game.
Now, the Performance Painting High Performance play of the game. Performance Painting, quality coatings applied with pride.
And it does go to the touchdown run for James Robinson. He punched it in the goal line. I guess there's a little solace in scoring a touchdown to make it 30-10. But as you said, the game was not in doubt at that point.
No, it wasn't. And, you know, he's a shell of himself right now. You can clearly see by his play that he's not 100%. That's a shame because a lot of our offense runs through him and his ability to run the tote pill.
Certainly the Jaguars losing to San Francisco today. One of the big stories, the other big story, is what happened in Gainesville. Dan Mullen out as the head coach of the Florida Gators. Let's welcome in Matt Hayes, national college football writer. Of course, you get him with Leon, myself, and Joe Cowart every day on XL Primetime. Matt, how we doing?
Great, boys. What's going on?
Matt, obviously, this was probably not unexpected. Maybe a little bit of a surprise that happened before the season came to an end, but your reaction around 2 o'clock today when you found out Dan Mullen was fired?
Not surprised at all, actually. You know, we've been talking about this for 2 weeks, and I was telling you guys that, I think Scott Strickland knew it had to be done. He just had to get there in his mind because he wanted Dan to succeed, but clearly the trend lines were there. You know, they've lost 9 of their last 11 games against Power 5 teams, and more than that, they're just not recruiting well. They're not at the point where they're keeping up with the heavyweights in the SEC in Alabama, Georgia, Texas A&M, and LSU. So you're trailing already as far as recruiting and getting in line to compete with those programs. And now you're losing to just about everybody in the league other than Vanderbilt. So you can't let that go on if you're at that point. And you're not paying a guy $7.57 million, top five in all of college football, to run a program like that. You're just not.
Matt, we were talking earlier today, 28 wins and 6 losses going into LSU last year. A complete and total disaster since. What happened in the last 11 months?
Well, I mean, it's just not one thing, Hack. I think it's a number of things, and I think it wasn't just that LSU game. And you know, I've kind of talked about this at length on primetime, and I went over it in detail on Saturday kickoff on Saturday. This thing started way before the beginning of last year. And there's a lot of things. I've said this so many times, and I don't think people realize the gravity of it, is when he put Florida on probation for the first time in 30 years, that was a big deal to not only Scott Strickland, but to President Fox, a big deal. And I don't think people realize that. I would think that anyone else who, you know, if it was another coach that hadn't gotten them to 3 straight New Year's 6 bowls, they'd have been fired right then. But I think that the capital that he built from that saved his job at that point. You know, and then it was just a number of things last year with the press conferences and the bizarre behavior. And then, you know, then you lose LSU, and it all falls apart from there. On the field, he clearly lost the locker room this year after the Georgia game when he was, you know, in the Sunday after the Georgia game, he's in the team meeting, and he's you know, taking the task, and they're pushing back on him, and he breaks the podium and storms out. And it just wasn't a good situation. You can't, again, if you pay a guy $7.57 million a year, and he's the fifth highest paid coach in all of college football, this cannot be what your program looks like right now.
Yeah, man, you know, right after the Alabama game, it seemed the last couple of games that have been coasted, it seems like he seemed to be uninterested. The team seemed to be uninterested. It didn't seem like the same team that played against Alabama that you seen them play against Kentucky moving forward, South Carolina moving forward. I mean, with Dan Mullen, will he get another job maybe as a head coach somewhere else? Is there any interest in him getting another job somewhere else?
Oh, I think there definitely is. I think it'll be what he wants to do. Does he want to stay as a college coach? Because he could easily get another job as a college coach at a Power 5 school, maybe even at a major Power 5 school. Or does he want to go to the NFL? He's always looked at the NFL. You know, if he goes to the NFL, he's not going to be a head coach. He'll have to be an offensive coordinator somewhere and then kind of develop a new head coach. In fact, that could even be in Jacksonville next year. As we watch this offense, which has zero creativity as far as conceptual ideas, I mean, zero creativity, he could be a nice little fit here, actually. So, yeah, it depends on all what he wants, Leon. Does he want to continue being a college guy, or does he want to try his hand in the NFL?
You know, Matt, now that it's happened, now that Dan Mullen's out, every Gator fan that I know immediately goes to what's next. Who's next? And I got to tell you, in the hours since this has gone down, as much as I would love Lane Kiffin, as much as I would love Mario Cristobal, the name that seems to be rising to the top in the early moments here is Billy Napier.
Yeah, Lane's not happening, Hack. I know you love Lane. I know you love to see Lane. It's not happening. That's just not – it's not a fit. It's not who they are. You know, I wrote in Saturday Down South for a column that's coming out shortly. It might even be out already, actually, on site. Florida doesn't need, you know, the sparkle and the razzmatazz and the – Florida needs normal right now. They need a ball coach. They need a guy who's going to recruit better than anybody else and a guy who's going to develop players. They don't need all that flash and dash. They need somebody who's going to go in there and coach football and recruit players. A guy who on the first day is going to get in that UAA plane, fly down to Bradenton, go over to the IMG Academy and say, what in the world is wrong? Why is there not a better relationship with us? And then go down to Fort Lauderdale, go down to St. Thomas Aquinas, and go down and right into that football coach's office, Harry, and say, what's going on? Why are we not having a better relationship? And then that's how you start recruiting the state of Florida. That's how you get better players. That's how you bring this program back. They need normal right now, Hack. They need a guy that's going to recruit, 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 and then develop, and go out and win games.
Man, you don't have any problem with Mullins, you know, not coaching the last game being senior day with those kids we recruited, 4 years ago.
Well, it's his decision, Leon. It doesn't bother me at all that he says no. He's probably right. He'd probably be more of a distraction than anything. It's unfortunate because, I mean, who is going to call plays for them? Who's going to run that team? I know Greg Knox is the interim coach. It's a tough spot to put that staff, which is already shorthanded because of the two firings a week and a half ago. So it's a tough spot to be in. I feel bad for those kids because it's their last game. And if they win it, they can get to a bowl game. But think about this, fellas. I mean, you know, 2.5 months ago, we were wondering if Mike Norvell was going to get fired because they could win two games maybe if they were lucky. And we were talking about how Florida would get a second shot at Alabama in the SEC championship game and they could still get to the playoffs. And now Dan Mullen's fired and Mike Norvell is a game away in Gainesville from beating the Gators and getting bowl eligible. It's crazy how this season has developed.
There's no doubt about that. It is unreal. It's one of the biggest falls from grace you'll ever see and one of the quickest time frames. Matt, leave us with this. We'll obviously do a lot more tomorrow on prime time. Appreciate you joining us on Sunday evening. For Gator fans listening that don't know much about Billy Napier, that is a name that you are going to hear. Maybe he is at the top of the list. Who knows? What can you tell us about Billy Napier?
So he was an assistant under Dabo Sweeney at Clemson and Nick Saban in Alabama. They both swear by him. Great recruiter, fantastic organization guy, gets it. Gets what it takes to win, the work it takes to win. He's a hard worker. He gets his first job. No, I've been comparing him to Billy Diamond. I know people are going to say, Billy Diamond, are you crazy? He coached under great coaches and gets his first shot at a lower tier school, much like Billy Donovan did at Marshall. He goes to Louisiana. The first year they go to the Sun Belt Championship game, they lose the championship game. They were 7-7 that year. Since that 7-7 season, he's won 31 of 36 games at Louisiana. And they're 10-1 right now. They'll probably be 12-1 in 2 weeks because they play Louisiana Monroe this coming week, and they'll beat them by whatever they want to beat them by. Then they'll play App State in the championship game. They've already beaten App State by 28 this year. So he's done a really, really good job at a program that was down when he got there.
He's only 42 years old, relatively young guy. We will certainly see. If not Billy Napier, leave us with a name that maybe nobody's talking about. Is it as simple as Napier? We've heard Luke Fickell. Obviously, I want Lane, but you don't think that's going to happen. Is there a name that you've heard or that you think may be out there that we're not talking about?
No, I think they're definitely going to take a run at Matt Campbell at Iowa State. I don't know if he'll leave. I mean, from all I've heard, from when I've talked to Matt and people who know him, you know, he's a Midwest guy. He's probably waiting for the Notre Dame job, but I'm sure they're going to take a run at him. There's no doubt about that. They need a guy that can recruit and a guy that has proven he can develop players, and that's really where they are right now.
It'll be fascinating to see, and we'll have it covered here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM. Matt, we will see you tomorrow at high noon.
All right, boys.
Matt Hayes, you get him every week or every day with Leon and myself, along with Joe Cowart on XL Primetime. Back into the Jaguars in one moment. You know what's interesting, Leon? The Gators' job is open now. Really strong possibility your alma mater's job is going to be open in about 6 days' time. So you're going to have Florida and Miami probably both looking for head coaches.
Yep, absolutely. That Lane Kiffin train, hopefully we can get them down there to Miami. I don't think we're going to be able to afford Mario. I mean, Mario's going to probably want an 8 to 10 year deal worth about, what, $60, $70, $75 million. I don't think that's in Miami's budget.
All right, Jaguar fans, 641-1010. One more segment of phone calls. If you want to get on the line, talk about the Jaguars' 30-10 loss to the San Francisco 49ers, you are more than welcome to do so. I will tell you, all the late games now have gone final. Kansas City has defeated the Dallas Cowboys. The Chiefs, a 19-9 winner over Dallas. Kansas City has found themselves a little bit. They were really, really struggling, but they've kind of put it together in recent weeks. The Arizona Cardinals have beat Seattle 23-13. That all but ends Seattle's divisional hopes in that NFC West as Arizona continues to roll. And Cincinnati goes out to Las Vegas, gets a really nice 32-13 win. So the Bengals looking very strong in the AFC North.
Nice. This is when teams make their push. They're all in pole position to try to get that seed. And it's good to see the Bengals playing the way they're playing after they struggled like a week ago.
With Leon Searcy, the Hacker Ryan Green with you. It is the Window World of Northeast Florida fifth quarter. We are presented by Jacksonville's area, Napa Auto Care Centers, and by Dr. George Barry and Barry Orthopedics. Your call's next, 641-1010, here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
The Window World of Northeast Florida fifth quarter, presented by Jacksonville Area Napa Auto Care Centers
and Dr. George Barry and Barry Orthopedics
on 1010XL.
You know, it never ceases to amaze me who might be listening to the program. We were talking about the Dan Mullen firing in Gainesville and how Billy Napier has potentially emerged as one of the main guys you're going to hear. Billy Napier played quarterback at Furman University. The guy who blocked for Billy Napier at Furman University actually lives here in the Jacksonville area. Well, I don't want to give his last name out because I'm not sure if he wants it out, but Ty, who played at Furman and was teammates with Billy Napier, joins us on 1010XL. Ty, how we doing?
Hey, good, Hack. How you doing, buddy?
Ty, we are good. Amazingly enough, you were teammates with Billy Napier in college. Obviously, Dan Mullen getting fired today at Florida. Your thoughts on the name Billy Napier being thrown out there as a potential replacement?
I love it, man. I mean, I grew up I went to Charlotte County High School up in South Georgia, but grew up a big Florida Gators fan. My dad had season tickets, so have Billy here would be awesome. You know, maybe get some little swag, right?
That's certainly something that the Gators need. Obviously, Dan Mullen did not get the job done on the recruiting trail. What kind of guy is Billy Napier?
He's a good dude, man. Really good guy. You know, I was talking to a buddy. I'm unfortunately a Jags guy too. I've had Jags tickets 15 years, and brought back to me. I was telling him about Billy and said, you know, just awesome guy. You know, would love to have him here. I think he would do a good job. I think he'd be a good recruiter. We'll see what happens.
We will. Ty, since you're a Jaguar fan, I'll go ahead and ask you your thoughts on the 30-10 loss to San Francisco earlier today.
It was pretty bad, right? I don't know what you say, man. That was terrible. I mean, you know, I got my son there, and it's not a lot of fun, man. I love Trevor Lawrence. You know, hopefully he's going to continue to improve, but overall, it was pretty frustrating.
Well, Ty, I appreciate the phone call. Hey, do me a favor. Hang on the line for 1 second, and we'll get Michael to get in touch with Ty. And pretty cool that Billy Napier's center in college actually lives here in Jacksonville.
Nice.
That's good stuff. And what was not good stuff, Leon, was the Jaguars' 30-10 loss to San Francisco. As we reset here, the Jaguars now 2-8. Jaguar offense did very little today. The Jaguar defense actually played reasonably well, but when your offense is giving you no support, you just kind of, I guess, fold at a certain point. Defensively as a whole, your thoughts on the way they played today?
Well, I mean, they were in a compromising position, to be quite honest with you. Anytime a team goes out and they do a 20-play drive and then your offense turns around, turns the ball over, and you've got to go right back out on the field. I knew it was going to be a very long day. I've been on the sidelines where the defense has been out there so long, and they would say, bro, get a couple of first downs to give us a break. And the Jaguar offense didn't do any of that today. And then the 49ers offense just wore them down, and I knew that by the time the fourth quarter was going to be came around, the game was over.
You mentioned this earlier. I'm not sure if it was on air or off air, but I know you said it to me. If you're a 49ers offensive lineman, that 20-play, 13-minute drive where you're just pounding on the opposing defense, that's an offensive lineman's dream, right?
It is. Now, I root for the Jaguars, but, you know, a teardrop did come out my eye when I saw that offensive line. Just because if you ask any offensive lineman, he wants to run the ball more than he pass protects. And when you've got the game plan set aside to where the mass majority of the time you're running the ball and you're running – sweeps and you're running traps and you're running powers and G's and whams and all that kind of stuff. Offensive line absolutely loves that kind of stuff.
All right, so that's the defensive story. Let's get to the offensive story. Quite frankly, it was offensive watching the offense today. It was not very good. They just don't have a lot of playmakers, Leon. I think that's the bottom line. They just don't have a lot of guys that can get the ball down the field. Trevor didn't have a lot of time to throw the ball. On the rare occasion he does have a lot of time to throw the ball, receivers aren't getting open. It is a bad offense right now. There are 7 games remaining. What, if anything, can be done to improve what they're doing offensively?
I don't know. I question their desire, especially up front, offensively. I question their desire to block. I mean, I've questioned their desire to protect Trevor. I question their desire to establish a formidable running game. I question the desire of the wide receivers to get open. I mean, yeah, I keep hearing we don't have any talent or tech, but these guys are paid for professionals. You're paid to go out there and execute at the highest level. And I know the talent pool isn't there, but give me something. You know, give me something to hope for in a four quarter game. And I'm not getting that.
Every week here on the fifth quarter, we do give you an injury update. It is brought to you by Farrah and Farrah. And there's certainly a lot to talk about, so let's get to it right now. The Farrah and Farrah injury update.
The personal injury attorneys of Farrah and Farrah present this injury update. Farrah and Farrah, protecting you and your family since 1979.
Leon, my goodness, Shaq Griffin leaves with a concussion. Jamal Agnew left with what looked like a very scary injury. Now, we don't have official word yet, but the Agnew injury did not look good. Cam Robinson left. Tyson Campbell left. Campbell, I mean, I think maybe did come back in or could have come back in. We did not see Cam Robinson, I don't believe, after he left with that injury. It was a bad day at the office for injuries, which just adds salt into the wound. Not only are you getting bludgeoned on the field, but your guys are dropping like flies as well.
Well, that's what happens when the more physical team comes to town. The other team gets beat up, and the Jaguars got beat up today. It's unfortunate, but the more physical team was the 49ers on both sides of the ball, and the end result is the vast majority of our guys are hurt and zero on their side.
I'm never going to be confused for being a doctor, but it did not take a rocket scientist to figure out the Agnew injury did not look good. Let's assume he's not playing against Atlanta. There goes your speed, right? Jamal Agnew was the one guy that had speed to get the ball down the field. Now you're going to have to rely on John Brown, I guess, or Tavon Austin. They just don't have anybody.
Dan Arnold.
To take the, well, Dan Arnold, but they decided not to throw him the ball today. I don't know what you do offensively at this point. I really don't. Look, they get paid to make a game plan. They get paid to go to work. The Falcons' defense, by the way, is horrible. The Falcons are not a very good football team. In fact, Atlanta has been outscored almost, was it 71-3 or something in the last two games. It's been ridiculous how bad they've been. Yet I can't find a way the Jaguars are going to be able to move the ball on them, despite how bad their defense is.
Well, the one good thing about the hack is that they don't pay us to have to figure it out. All right, so let that be their job. That's not our job. Our job is to critique them when they play as bad as they played this Sunday.
Is it Daryl Bevel's fault? Is it Trent Baalke's fault for personnel? Is it Urban's fault?
Yes.
Whose fault is it?
Yes, yes, and yes. Yeah, collectively. They're joined at the hip. Huh? All three of them are joined at the hip. Absolutely. It's all three of their fault.
Let's get one more phone call in here on the fifth quarter on a Sunday night. Last call of the night to the south side. Let's get Mark in here on 1010XL. Mark, go ahead.
Hey, thanks, guys. It's an honor to be the last call of the night. So, yeah, the Jaguars did it again. But my question was about the Mullen replacement and the future Urban Meyer replacement, because I'm guessing that he's going to step down at the end of the year like he's done in the past. But I know you've talked about other coaches that are kind of coaches in waiting. But I wonder, like, are there any coaches of color that you guys can think of that might be, like, a good fit for Florida or to jump in with the Jaguars? Like, I've heard of Eric Bieniemy in the past. But I just wonder what your thoughts are about, like, coaches of color stepping into those head coaching roles.
Hey, Mark, appreciate it. I think Mel Tucker is a guy that you're going to hear a lot of, although yeah. They got absolutely annihilated.
They did get destroyed.
Yesterday in the horseshoe.
And Bieniemy, he's not taking a job at college. Man, maybe he could take a college coaching job, but, I mean, he deserves a shot as a professional head coach, to be quite honest with you, the job that he's done in Kansas City. So I can't see him going to coach a collegiate football team. So his next stop will be probably with another team, another professional team.
You get the sense, though, Leon, we're going to start hearing a lot of that about Urban. I think Urban's here for the long haul. I don't think Urban takes the job and without knowing, A, how tough it was going to be, and B, if it didn't go his way, he was going to quit after 1 year. I know that kind of goes against a little bit of his track record. But I think he wants to put that track record to bed, and he wants to build something up. This is probably his last coaching job in the world of football. So I would be very, very surprised if he were to step down. But I do think as the losses accumulate, you're going to hear more and more fans start saying things like that.
Yeah, if he bounces after this year, he'll never get another job professionally. He'll never get another job. Now, collegiately, you know, all is forgiven, but professionally, I couldn't see him taking somebody hiring him if he just bounces after this year.
Say
they go 3-15, with 3-14. All right, no, he can't bounce. Yeah, because I think the key for him staying around is Trevor. If you can put some pieces around Trevor, get him some weapons, give him a solid offensive line, good running game. Let's just see what happens. He has another year of drafting a free agent and see if he can put some pieces around.
We got to go quick here, but do you think Urban had any idea how bad Dave Caldwell was at assembling talent? Did he know what he was walking into here? Caldwell committed football malpractice. Absolutely incredible that they gave that guy a job for as long as they did. The roster was terrible under him.
Yeah.
And I think Urban now is paying the price for that.
Yeah, he is. He is. He's having to endure years upon years upon years of bad selections, picks, and free agents, and cap casualties. I mean, cap malpractice, you would say. So, I mean, it is what it is. He's got to deal with it. I think the whole NFL experience for Urban has been overwhelming with everything that's happened this year alone. So if he can endure this year and then, you know, start fresh next year, we'll see.
They've Caldwell drafted Caleb on Chase on two picks before Justin Jefferson.
And Justin Jefferson is lighting them up.
Jaguars needed a receiver because they took LaVisca Chenault in the second round. Absolutely incredible.
It's incredible.
More to do. Wrap things up on the fifth quarter. Get you ready for a busy week here on 1010XL, a short week here on 1010XL as Thanksgiving is on the horizon. With Leon Searcy, the hacker Ryan Green with you. We'll put a bow on it next here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Putting an extra 60 minutes on the clock. The Window World of Northeast Florida fifth quarter. Presented by
Dr. George Barry and Barry Orthopedics.
And Jacksonville area Napa Auto Care Centers on 1010XL.
All right, Leon, as we wrap things up, final thoughts from you. A 30-10 loss to the San Francisco 49ers. The Jaguars now fall to 2-8 on the year.
Well, you can't give up. You know, you got to keep fighting.
Got seven more to go.
You got seven more to go. You can't give up. You got 24 hours, like Coach Campbell says. You got 24 hours to celebrate. You got 24 hours to soak and feel sorry for yourself. And then when you get your day off, you come back to work on Wednesday, and you try to do something different that you didn't do last week. And the Jaguar, everybody on this team needs to take a look at themselves in the mirror and ask themselves, are they giving their best effort? I guarantee you the mass majority of them will say no.
2-8, Thanksgiving week, the distractions that come with that. What do you think going into Atlanta on Sunday?
You got to be a professional. I know the holidays is coming up, Thanksgiving, a lot to be thankful for, family around and all that kind of stuff, but you're paid professionals. You got to deal with your family accordingly, have a good time, you know, a lot to be thankful for, but then you got to go to work and try to win a game. That's what it's all about. I had to go through the same thing, try to win a game. Doing a Thanksgiving weekend, so I don't want to hear the excuse about the holidays and family and all that kind of stuff. If the family is a distraction, then you need to move yourself away from that distraction and get your mind ready to win a game on Sunday.
Leon, we'll do it again at high noon tomorrow on XL Primetime.
Let's do it.
That is Leon Searcy. Michael Phillips produced it. I'm the hacker, Ryan Green. This has been the Window World of Northeast Florida. Fifth quarter, we have been presented by Jacksonville's area. Napa Auto Care Centers, along with Dr. George Barry and Barry Orthopedics. The Jaguars fall today 30-10 to the San Francisco 49ers. Again, 2-8 on the year. The Atlanta Falcons on the horizon next Sunday at 1 o'clock. For Matt Hayes, Dan Hicken, and Frank Frangie, all who joined us earlier to talk about Dan Mullen, certainly appreciate those guys taking time out on Sunday night as well. It's a busy week here on 1010XL. The Gator job is open. Oh, by the way, Florida and Florida State on Saturday. Winner goes to a bowl game. Loser season is over. And, of course, the Jaguars will have a lot to do. And Jeff Prosser will be in this studio at 6 a.m. And we'll begin 16 hours of local programming. Leon and I will talk to you at noon tomorrow. Until then, have a terrific night, everybody.